Is his hat in the ring? Sort of. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who ran for president in 2008, tells Fox News Sunday he's thinking about a run for the 2016 GOP nomination.
When people ask me, are you open to the possibilities? The honest answer is yes. Does that mean I'm running? I don't honestly know.
Huckabee says any decision he makes would be one of the heart. Former NBA star Dennis Rodman says he's in North Korea to set plans for an exhibition basketball game, not necessarily to meet with leader Kim Jong-un.
People need to understand that it's not important for me to meet him every time I come over, because he has another greater job to do for his country, and I respect that.
Rodman tells the AP that his current visit is to train the North Korean basketball players who will be taking part in a match that he's organizing for Kim's birthday next month. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nicky Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20, because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. You thought you were so funny when you did that line. That was an ad lib.
That was also a long time ago.
I'm not cheap. I'm careful.
I am funny now.
Though. Anyways, I'm glad to be back here with my new knee. Everybody say hi to my new knee.
Hi.
And my only advice is, unless you have to do it, don't do it, because it hurts. We've got a very cool show today.
And my only advice is if you live with somebody who's getting their knee replaced, it's time for you to go on a vacation.
And my advice is, if you live with somebody who lacks the empathy chip,
I do.
Get a nurse.
Yeah, get
but
a nurse.
But anyways, John Rorpaugh's in. He's the Director of Sustainable Initiatives at ProFish, and he's brought in Tim Devine of Barron Island Oysters, and they have so many cool stories to tell. We're going to hear from them in a moment.
And when we went to the new Iron Gate restaurant, opened up by Neighborhood Restaurant.
Very romantic dinner,
I
might add.
It was a very romantic dinner. I know.
Yes.
And that was before the medication. We got talking with Brent Kroll about his Marsala program, which we were really amazed by.
We didn't get talking with him. He came over and said, have you heard about our Marsala? He's like all jacked up about Marsala.
Okay, talk about being jacked up.
I'm not jacked up. I'm saying it's like a new drug or something.
Anyway, so he's going to give us the 411 that Marsala is not just for cooking, it's actually for drinking. And we have in with us, I'm sure many of you have heard about the very hot Osteria Marini down
at Osteria.
Osteria.
Osteria. You said Osteria.
Okay. I'm already done.
She's already
with the show. I'm already done. We have pastry chef Alex Levin in studio. He's brought in, did I say that wrong? Are you going to correct me on that?
No.
Okay, good. He's brought in gorgeous pastries. It looks like lots of good things to eat. So we'll be digging into that.
And Eric Rohleder, who's the owner and founder of Cordial Wine and Spirits over at Union Market, which is basically the hottest wine and spirits store in town, is in. And we're talking bubbly alternatives for the holiday season. It's not just champagne, kids. So why don't we start with you, since you've got that fun stuff over there.
Absolutely. Let's
do
it. Why
don't we talk a little bit about the shop and your background and how all that happened? Because we met you right literally as you were putting stock up on the shelves at Union Market.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it was, what, about 3-4 months ago.
It was like 1848. I don't
know. Sure. Yeah, something like that.
Back then, man.
We've about closing in on a year here at Union Market and just having a blast. The holidays have been going great. A little background about Cordial. We started the company about 2 years ago. Really just focusing on bringing independent importers, independent distributors, craft breweries, local wine, beer, spirits to the market. Our small little team, we're only about 3 folks, really just focus on bringing small producers to market, really telling
but
this story.
How do you go about finding these small producers, and how do you go, it's a double question. Not only do you have to find these small producers, but how do you educate your consumer who comes into the market who just only knows the big name brands?
Finding the distributor is really the easy part. The importers, we have very good relationships with. Mm-hmm. And I've been in contact with these folks for, you know, the better part of a decade here. And, you know, these are folks who specialize in Spain, France, Italy, small parts of the Pacific Northwest, California, Virginia, in, you know, obviously the breweries that are popping up all over the world. These are people who are passionate about the products that they import and that they distribute.
Okay.
And so, you know, we really create a sort of network within that to supply the shop with those really unique brands.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we bring those in, the easiest part is honestly telling the story about where they come from. And that's what we try to get people jazzed about, you know, because we bring in everything and everything is handpicked by us. We can really speak to every single bottle.
Like where it comes from and what's happening.
Everything that's on the shelf.
Well, that's a perfect segue to talking about stuff for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, yeah, can we pop bottles now?
Yeah. So, I mean,
thirsty.
So well, let's talk a little bit. So I think, you know, bubbly clearly is what goes well this time of year.
Yep.
But you thought that we would do something different instead of just talking about champagne. You brought in an array of other sparkling options.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I think, you know, for all of us that are, you know, going to the holidays and the festivities and bringing gifts and everything like that, we're on, you know, a budget. You know, we don't want to spend $70 to $80 on a bottle of Dom P or anything like that, you know, some vintage champagne. So
what about Dr. P?
Dr. P? I only
that's
have his
what
diet.
He's,
only
that's his what diet. He's buying.
Yeah.
Now you know why. Hey. I'm stuck where I am.
Happy holidays to one and all.
Okay.
But so I brought, an array of sparklers from around the wine world that we carry at Cordial. And that we, all of them are actually under $20.
So what are you starting with?
So we're going to start with one of my personal favorites. It's Riccardo Prosecco from the area of Treviso, up in the Veneto in the northeast of Italy.
Okay.
And so,
I mean, so for people who don't know the difference between, let's say, Prosecco and champagne, what would you say is the biggest difference?
Well, the biggest difference between Prosecco and champagne is the way that it's actually made.
Okay.
It's called the Charmat method in Italy. Which is basically a tank fermentation rather than a bottle fermentation process.
Okay.
Which is what this goes through. Rather than being bottle fermented, where the folks in Champagne and other areas of the world, they'll put some yeast back into the bottle, let it ferment for a little bit, and then riddle it, and then it'll go through a fermentation process and CO2 and alcohol.
Okay.
We'll get back into it.
All right. Well, let's take a pour of this and bring on our next guest.
Yep.
All right. Well, we talked about John Rorapaw already. He's the director of sustainable initiatives at ProFish. And John, before we get into Tim and his deal, the raising these gorgeous oysters we're looking at, let's just talk about your mission at ProFish and the whole issue of the whole context of sustainability that has really taken over everybody's consciousness in the food provision world.
Sure. I've seen it come full circle. I started 10 years ago with sustainability, and Monterey Bay was really the only place you could go to and see the red, green, and, you know, the stoplight grading system that they did. Now we've gotten to a place where you can go to NOAA's website, and as long as you're buying domestic seafood, you know that you're buying sustainable.
Right.
So the movement has become, you know, it's not a movement anymore. It's ingrained
It's
how we buy. It's how restaurants buy. It's how our government looks at fisheries management.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see.
Well, I mean, is the context of sustainability, the definition of it, is that evolving, or is it what it is and more people are getting on board?
It's still pretty basic. You know, the fact that fish grow faster than we can catch them, you know, and that's where the limits are set, you know, to make sure that we don't deplete stock. So that's still the basics. But it's become across the board more accepted, and there's menus designed around it. And another thing that's good is the fishermen have changed their harvest techniques to become more sustainable.
Is that a catch share thing?
Well, is that more seasonality? Are people because I know fishermen, it's been a big problem with fishermen because it is their business, and given the change that's going on and what people are demanding. So is it working for the fishermen as well as it's working for
the consumer? It is as well, because most of the sustainable methods are better for the fish.
Okay.
They're better quality to market.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting more money for their product.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to glutton themselves. You know, there was a time when halibut seasons in Alaska were only open for 3 days at a time.
Okay.
These boats would go out and they would sink their boats because they knew they had to catch so many fish. So they would literally put so many fish on their deck, a high sea would come up and it would sink the boats. So fisheries have gotten away from that. They've gone into catch shares.
It's called fishing for the hell of it.
That's right, for the hell of it.
Thank you.
Why don't you have another glass of wine? Well, let's talk about that, because you and I were talking off air about rockfish, right?
Right, and Maryland State has gone to a catch share this year for the first time. Mm-hmm. January 1st it starts. And basically the difference is it was a common pool system before, mm-hmm. where there was 2 million pounds in 2013 that they could catch. And the state would say, okay, you're open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. And you could never plan, you know, depending on the catch, you could never plan when it was going to be open.
Right.
It's terrible for menus.
Sure.
Chefs couldn't, you know.
They couldn't count on it.
You couldn't put it on a menu. It was just a special item. So now they take that 2 million pounds, they spread it over the 800 fishermen that they have, mm-hmm. and those guys can go out whenever they want. You know, if it's a Valentine's weekend, they know they should go out. You know.
So once they hit the limit, and that's the end of it.
Who watches over their shoulders?
Maryland State, the fisheries department does. They do a great job of it.
All right. Well, let's change tracks just a little bit. So just very quickly, you brought in this Indian candy. Is that what it's called? Oh, my God.
Right.
It's so good. So can you tell us what it is and where you guys are making it and your sort of your big news?
There's a new crack in Northeast, and it's Indian candy.
I think you're going to have to spread that one
around
a little bit more.
Those of us with college degrees refer to it as Native American candy.
Yes.
So we started smoking this product 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. ProFish has a division called Fenwick Smokehouse.
Okay.
And we produce all of our own smoke products. We're the only wholesaler that does that. And we're the only smokehouse that uses all fresh product.
Okay.
Usually it's a frozen product that comes in, then gets smoked, and then gets sold to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is completely fresh. So we take good things, maple syrup and brown sugar, and Ron Goodman is our mad scientist chef that comes up with these
Where
recipes.
Where does the salmon come from?
The salmon comes from Norway.
It's amazing.
I wish I had a local choice on that, but at least it's smoked locally. And,
well, let's talk about that. So this smokehouse is a part of a bigger project.
Right. We started 2 years ago in-house. We have a 1,500-pound capacity in our warehouse now where we are on Fenwick Street. And across the street on Oakey Street, we built two big buildings, bought old buildings, and repurposed them for the smokehouse.
Okay.
So it's going to be Ivy City Smokehouse is the concept.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have the wholesale part of it for the smoking. Then we're going to have a wholesale to public part in the front just for the smoked and some fish products.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to jump in.
But there's going to be a restaurant?
There's a restaurant on the roof.
And there's going to be like a raw bar, right?
It's going to be a raw bar.
Give us all the information.
Fresh products on the bar. Probably have whole swordfish there when we have swordfish for the day.
Okay.
It's because it's right across the street from our wholesale market. So you'll be able to come in and get
the
smoked products.
What's the ETA on it?
60 days.
That's soon.
March.
All right. I'm going to interrupt
right,
this
go
love
ahead.
Fest
I know.
Because I want Tim Devine to step
Absolutely.
Up to the mic. Tim is still is a great commercial photographer, but he left that out of New York City and started a company called Barron Island Oysters. And if you want a trip, go to his website. What is it, Barron Island?
BarronIslandOysters.com.
Blow your mind. So let's kind of, we're going to have to, we don't have a lot of time. Talk
we
about.
We do have a lot of time. We're fine.
Actually, we don't.
Yes,
let's
we
talk
do.
About, you know, like how you got into this and how you decided, how you stood the business up.
I got into it about 3 years ago when I read in the Star Democrat that the state was opening up the ability to lease bottom space for projects like aquaculture. I applied for a couple leases and got them.
But what did you know about aquaculture at the time?
Oh, absolutely nothing.
Okay, just making sure.
He thought they said aquaculture.
It just sounded like a really good idea.
No, I mean, I grew up on the bay. I've always known about oysters being good for the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it had always been kind of a dream to do something about the bay rather than just, you know, talking about it. And so this opportunity presented itself at a time in my life when I wanted to start a second business, and I jumped in.
Well, let's talk about how you found the oyster that you're working with, because it's not an oyster it's not an oyster that people see a lot of, correct?
Well, no. I mean, it's not that uncommon, but it is a special oyster.
Mm-hmm.
It is a triploid oyster. It is essentially the mule of the oyster world. In the process of getting those permits, I had a lot of time to go around and do a little bit of market research. And I spoke to a lot of chefs, and they all wanted the same thing. They wanted a triploid oyster, which is this, with a tough shell.
Mm-hmm.
Triploids, because they don't reproduce, grow very fast. So the shells tend to be a little bit brittle.
Mm-hmm.
So I put them through a chipping process where I break off the new growth as they grow about every 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the shell that remains is a little bit tougher.
Okay.
And the shape becomes more consistent. And so I get this really wonderful deep cup.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to cut into these oysters and get to taste them.
And I want to talk about where triploid babies come from.
Yes.
They don't
absolutely.
Make,
I mean, how do they make them?
They come from Mars.
Okay. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are doing bubbles and oysters. I can't think of a better way to start the day. We'll be back in just a sec.
Do you miss the joy of reading because of blindness or disability? Here's great news about Choice Magazine Listening, a free talking magazine. You'll hear outstanding articles and stories chosen from leading publications such as The New Yorker, National Geographic, Smithsonian, Time, Sports Illustrated, and many more. Please call 1-888-7-CHOICE or on the web www.choicemagazinelistening.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Tim Devine, who's the founder and owner of Barren Island Oysters on the bay in Maryland. Tim, let's get back to, I mean, you were on a special hunt for a special kind of oyster that the chef said they wanted, but these oysters don't reproduce, so how does it work?
I can't actually do the nursery where I am because I only have 17 parts per thousand salinity. So I needed a saltier place. So I went down to Virginia and found this guy named Mike Congrove, Oyster Seed Holdings, who does a fantastic job of breeding these type of oysters. And what he does is he takes a diploid, a 2-chromosome oyster, and breeds it with a tetraploid, a 4-chromosome oyster. Both happen naturally. The 4s are just much more rare.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, you get this 3-chromosome oyster called the triploid. And it's really great because it's available all year round.
Okay.
It isn't affected by the months with R rule.
Okay.
And it also has proven disease resistant.
Wow.
So you go out, how many times do you go out and pull them up out of the water and chip them?
In a lifetime, an oyster's touched by me a minimum of 10 times,
jeez.
I think.
So you
and
lose
so what
a lot
do most
too.
People do? Most people just don't do it at all. They just let them grow and take them out and that's it?
No. Most usually, I would say maybe do it 3 times.
Okay.
At the most.
Mm-hmm.
What do you lose? Because you got to when you're chipping.
I kill a lot of oysters.
Yeah, because it's not. It's a very aggressive process,
the butcher,
right?
It is. It's a very aggressive process, and it breaks them up so much so that there are ones that do get that can't heal.
But the okay. oyster, I mean, you just pop this one open. It's huge.
Yeah,
huge.
They're really
it's like a
great.
Softball.
Now, how did you guys connect?
I don't remember. I think it was through an event at Ocean City for Waterman.
Okay.
And we just got talking, and everybody liked the product, and it started selling. It was great.
That's exactly what it was.
Is that it?
Maryland opened up 1,800 leases.
Okay.
And
yeah, because does Maryland have a huge oyster culture?
It used to.
It used to, but it does. Does it
right.
now? Like, or is it just starting?
It was very smart by the state because they put these filter feeders into the bay at no cost to them. Basically, they got people to come in and grow millions of oysters mm-hmm. to help clean the bay up. So we would go to the watermen associations and talk and tell them about marketing of oysters and what
right.
they should do in their preparation to growing them.
You know, there was talk a couple of years ago that the Chesapeake Bay Foundation was basically spinning its wheels, and then after spending hundreds of millions of dollars, the bay really wasn't getting much cleaner. Is this? Are they involved in this process, or is this just you guys doing your thing and your oysters?
Those oysters are delicious.
Right?
Yeah, they're great.
They're really plump. They're really meaty. They're not slimy at the least.
I mean, literally,
and
it's
so
like
briny.
A creamy, buttery
creamy,
oyster
really
with
creamy.
Just the right salinity. Any
That's
less
delicious.
Wouldn't be right.
I think I need to have some sparkling with that. No, I'm kidding.
And I love that you ate it naked. That is fantastic.
Let me clarify that for my audience. The only time she does that is at home, but no, I mean, even just slurping it down, it's beautiful. About oysters is when you get a little one that's just kind of mealy, it's like, what's the point?
So does it have anything to do with the water where it's grown in?
That location is probably 80% of the taste.
Okay.
Salinity is the big part, mm-hmm. where it's 17 parts per thousand, which is really what a bay oyster should be. We're in brackish water.
Mm-hmm.
The location I have is actually in the bay, which is very unique because most farms are in coves and rivers and things like that, mm-hmm. and their salinity gets affected by the rainfall.
Sure.
So it changes all the time, and mine is actually quite stable. So
you have a consistent product.
I have a very consistent product, which is great.
Cool.
Great tide. They eat algae.
Mm-hmm.
The bay has too much algae.
Right, so they do what they're supposed to do.
When people talk about the bay being polluted, mm-hmm. it's not with toxins or anything like that. It's literally like farm runoff and lawn runoff, and so it's too much algae.
Okay.
And so these are actually cleaning the bay.
Right, they're filters. They take it in.
The more I put in, the cleaner the water gets.
Well, that means your business has to get bigger.
So where can we find these oysters here in D.C.?
All over the place. I think usually sell out really quick, so you have to make sure you get there on a Friday or Saturday.
Which restaurants?
But definitely go down to Tony and Joe's on mm-hmm. the waterfront. Go to Pearl Dive, but really be there by Saturday because I know they sell out.
Okay.
Black Salt,
mm-hmm. So all Jeff
Range.
Black places. Brian,
good.
I don't know. I mean, John's the distributor.
Brian's a big fan. Brian Voltage is a big fan.
All the really terrible restaurants.
Yeah.
Jeff Black was the co-host last week.
We had Jeff co-hosting.
Lying home screaming and whining.
Jeff Black was my first customer.
Awesome. Aww,
that is so
smart guy.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. I want to go back to John because I want to talk about what ProFish is doing.
Charity-wise.
I love this for next year. Of course, I came up with the name, so I like it even more. tell everybody what you're doing because I think this is such a great concept.
It's called Charity Off the Hook.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Play with the fish and the charities. We've seen through the dinners we've done and the relationships we've had with the state and nonprofits that those are the relationships that really catapult your business and get you into different areas.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to include charities more into our – so we have a monthly local fish that mm-hmm. pairs up with a charity. So you go to our website and go to or charityoffthehook.com
mm-hmm.
and it'll explain the charity. The first one's in January. It's Chef Allison Sosna.
Right.
She has microgreens. Where she trains low-income kids
mm-hmm.
to stretch their dollars. You know, you get $6 a day, I think, for income. Mm-hmm. I mean, low-income families with welfare. And she'll teach them how to take a chicken and break it down and have that
She's
for
amazing.
Four meals.
She's incredible. Amazing. I really like her.
So we highlight hers through our website.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a local fish. I think blue catfish is our first. And we sell a ton of it. So she'll get...
So you'll market that to the chefs.
Right. They'll on their purchase, a percentage of that purchase goes directly to her charity.
It's amazing.
And then she's featured for a month, and then the next month it might be Oyster Recovery Partnership, and then it might be Becky's Fund,
mm-hmm.
or it might be a lot of community involvement. So it just brings restaurants, wholesalers, and the community together into a bigger,
Well, and it also gives a chance for the consumer to know about what you guys are doing as well, which I think is great. All right. We're good.
Guys.
Thank you guys so much. This was so interesting.
Oh, it's been great.
How long does the Indian candy last?
It lasts for 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Okay.
Fresh. Real quick, you can freeze it.
ProFish online.
ProFish.com.
Brilliant.
Thank
and
you.
60 days. 60 days. Look for the new concept.
Look for the smokehouse.
Okay, great.
So let's go back to Eric Rohleder and talk. This Prosecco was really very nice.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Excellent. I did.
Yeah. It has a nice little white apple, a little bit of white pear to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, pairs wonderfully, especially with shellfishes of the world and everything like that.
It went very well with that.
For the
oyster.
Kind of the meatballs out there, and I am their spokesperson. Like, what's the difference between this a Prosecco maybe and like Cava? Is that just the Spanish version of the same thing?
So Cava will actually be a traditionally made champagne.
Like in the method?
Yeah, method traditionnel. So,
mm-hmm.
same way that they make champagne. They just make it in Cava, or in Spain.
Okay. But is it the same grapes?
No, different grapes altogether.
Mm-hmm.
They make them from three grapes, traditionally Zarelio, Perrieta, and Macabeo,
okay.
And maybe a little bit of Chardonnay.
That sounds easy for you to say.
I got a lot of practice. And we can actually try one right now. You guys want to?
Well, it looks like you poured something else first.
Okay.
So do you want to start with that?
I can do that too.
Okay, what did you get first?
Pour them same glass.
No.
It'll be fine.
I can just drink them all at once.
What are you pouring? What are you pouring next?
So the next one we're going to pour is a Cremant de Loire. So this is a little French wine. Sparkler grown up in the northwest of France in the area of Loire.
Mm-hmm.
It's made from a blend of Chenin Blanc and Chardonnay.
Okay.
Grown from an area outside called Tarn, which is typically known for growing Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part...
I always think Cremant is it's just so creamy. It's so... I prefer Cremant. I just love it. I think it's a really lovely...
I mean, there's so many different expressions of it. I mean, they make Cremant de Lemieux down in the southwest. They make Cremant de Provence. They make Cremant de Bourgogne, you know, with Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And these are some of the best values you can find outside of Champagne, in my opinion.
Right.
And so we're going to start off. This is a Cremant de Loire, Clémence Garry. And let's see. These are still filled with Prosecco. You guys want me to just pass?
Yeah. No, sure. Come on. All right. Let's bring on Brent.
So, Brent.
You want to take over that mic, Brent?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So you guys can stay seated.
So we're talking Marsala, and the whole conversation came up when we were, that you have discovered what many people, you know, let's put it this way. A lot of people think Marsala and they think chicken or veal, and clearly there's so much more to it, and you were telling us about it, and we said you got to come on the show, so.
Yeah, in my mind, Marsala is the true Rodney Dangerfield of fortified wines. Absolutely no respect. Less than Madeira, less than Sherry. Like Madeira, they can cook in expressions. They can use non-noble grape varieties and add salt and pepper to it. So that's your a la chicken Marsala.
Right. Well, so let's talk about, thank you, Marsala, and why you have such an affinity for it, and what is it exactly?
It can be a lot of different sugar levels. It can be different indigenous grapes. Marsala is actually the port town in western Sicily, so that's what it's named after. It's a fortified wine. They used to fortify it for its trip to
England. For people
England.
Who don't know what a fortified wine is, can you explain that?
Strengthened with neutral grape spirit or brandy, per se.
Okay.
But pretty much similar to Madeira, which used to ship across the Atlantic, there was a guy, John Woodhouse, who discovered Marsala, and he would fortify it or add grape spirit or brandy to it for its trip up to England. Then it would get shipped back, so we would have hot, really poor condition trips, just like Madeira would. And dry expressions are kind of like dry Madeira, too. When you think about how versatile it is and the pairings with it, you can start with it chilled as an aperitif. You can have it with pate or like a seared foie gras for an appetizer. You can do it with braised meat. And you can do it with something like an almond cake or a cinnamon cake after dinner. So something with that much versatility is really special.
But I think people think when they think, I think of Marsala as something that's going to be like sticky and sweet.
The ones I brought today are absolutely dry.
Absolutely not.
No, they can be. It's just like Madeira, for example. If you have like a Malmsey, like sweet Madeira, it can smell like maple syrup and it can be like kind of rich but still acidic.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a dry Madeira, like Syracil, it can smell like it's going to be sweet with like notes of like caramel and kind of a nuttiness but still finished dry and acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Marsala kind of operates the same way.
Okay.
Well, do you have trouble at the restaurant when you suggest Marsala to people and they go, yeah, no thanks?
I've not been teased yet by a guest yet about having Marsala.
Except for my husband.
Really well.
Okay.
I believe I did that.
But why at Iron Gate, why put together a list of Marsalas? I mean, what was it that you were like, this is the right place for it?
I took the challenge of this job to do a lot of homework and a lot of research as far as the history of Southern Italy and of Greece. Those are the pillars, I think, for the program.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was reading about Southern Italy, there's always a segment dedicated to Marsala. So then when I started reading about Marsala producers, it said a lot of these, almost like champagne style, are owned by huge corporations, not really done that well. And they said this guy, Marco de Bartoli, is in a league of his own.
Okay.
So I decided to pick up everything I could from him and do a dedication page, not only to Marsala, but to him as well.
That's fascinating. What are you
well, nothing. When we come back, Marsala, there are several colors that it sort of comes in, and that indicates the flavor and the we have to take a break.
All right, we have to take a break. But when we come back, why don't you pour a little, and we'll look at the colors, and we'll get a little Marsala 101.
Sounds great. This is
David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. When is the last time you went to bed hungry? Right here in the Washington metro area. Nearly 150,000 children are going to bed hungry each night. Help the Capital Area Food Bank make this holiday season special for children in need. For every dollar you donate, the food bank can provide three meals. Visit capitalareafoodbank.org or call 202-644-9800 to make a donation today.
Every year, thousands in the D.C. metro community come to the Salvation Army in need of help. In fact, in 2012 alone, the Salvation Army of the National Capital Region aided 81,946 individuals living across the greater Washington region. Crisis, hunger, and homelessness can happen anytime to virtually anyone. So when you see their bell ringers and red kettles out this holiday season, make a donation and feel good knowing you're contributing to the well-being of your friends, neighbors, and the greater Washington community.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people. Touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis and Brent Kroll, who is the master of all things potable at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, is in talking about the new Marsala program.
Well, all wine Gate. Things. All wine things. Well, Jeff Fales is doing all the spirit
things. I know Jeff Fales
things.
There, but you know. It's...
Got to give credit where credit's due, right?
Actually, we've known you since, honest to God, since... Ardeo, yeah. Since
well,
you
that's
were,
how you started,
well,
right?
You were knee-high to a grasshopper, and here you are now at NRG. So let's talk about Marsala. It comes in sort of a golden amber and ruby color. I know that from the notes you gave us, but what causes
yeah, because he
that?
Would not have known that otherwise.
Oh, my God.
Just saying.
Give me a break. But she's
would you?
Right.
Would you have known?
Would you? Tell me why that happens.
Well, you can use white or red grapes in production. The one that I just passed around... Is a white version of it, or it's kind of an amber color.
Okay.
Oro is it's classified as. This is made from 100% Griot, which is an oily, kind of soft textured grape. Mm-hmm. It's fairly mild in acidity, although this is a very acidic wine.
That tastes more like a port.
It does taste more like a port. It doesn't look like a port, but it really does taste like one.
I think the way it's like fortified with how you add like that grape spirit to it is kind of port-like, mm-hmm. where port's kind of like vanilla and like candied cherry and kind of has that the grapey type thing to it. This is, for me, I get a lot of like maple, caramel, and sort of certain.
Well, I also think it's lighter in texture.
Yeah.
You know, pork can be really heavy on the tongue, and I don't feel that with this at all.
And that's why sometimes if you, put a chill on it, you can have it as an aperitif. But then also some of those great nutty notes are great for braised meats.
Mm-hmm.
It has the acidity and also richness for foie. So that's why some of these pairings are so awesome with it.
Yeah, but it's also not stereotypically Marsala-ish. And that's what makes it so different.
Think of as Marsala-ish.
And what you just said, sticky and sweet.
Right.
It's not that at all.
A lot of the cooking Marsalas are the Ruby Marsalas, too. A lot of times they'll make really sweet. They'll use red grapes. And they can sometimes even season it, like I said, too. So those are normally... a red flag if you're buying Marsala blindly.
Okay.
A red one.
Now, are there layers of quality in Marsala? As far as like, can you cellar a Marsala? Like, that's hard to say. Can you do that? And would you?
I personally would. I think it's great to have around. Like this one, for example, is 4 years in 225 liter French oak barrels.
Okay.
And some of them can be aged in oak up to 10 years, but he's the standard for quality Marsala right now. So if you were to get some of his stuff and set it down in a cellar for 10 or 20 years.
You can.
Yeah, easily.
Okay. And so you brought in some cake too to try with it. You want to tell us what you brought in?
Yeah, this is a walnut cake with a pear and a cinnamon mascarpone.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to show with like a fall, dessert, how well it can do. Even
go ahead.
Somebody's got to try this.
Is this something available at Iron Gate?
Yes.
Oh, it's a beautiful dessert. So as you're recommending people to try Marsala, Where are you putting it the most right now?
I'm either recommending it mostly as an aperitif.
Okay.
Or I'm pairing it with some of our desserts.
And are people still doing that, aperitifs? I feel like more people are ordering, because, you know, cocktails are so trendy. I feel like people have a cocktail more than an aperitif to start off. Like, are people doing that? Is there a swing back to that?
It's hard for me to tell people whether they should start with a cocktail or an aperitif, because Jeff's cocktails are so good.
Right.
aperitif-wise, though, when someone comes in and does a tasting menu, there is an aperitif included no matter what, just to reset the palate.
So you're forcing it. You better have that aperitif and like it.
I force a palate cleanse on each guest who does wine pairing.
Great.
You know, the Marsala really changes the taste of the tort and the I don't know what you call the topping or whatever.
That's a mascarpone.
The blend of it is really, it's just delicious. It's like ice cream almost. It's fabulous.
Because it's so balanced, you don't often really get the acidity unless you look for it. I think it comes in on the side of your tongue. If you have a sip on it and really chew it, the acidity in this is, I mean, like Sauvignon Blanc Riesling type acidity in a fortified wine.
Cool. Are you going to do any classes?
We're trying to. If I can get enough supply, unfortunately, this is like a pretty limited product. So if I can get enough of it, I would love to do.
Because I feel like you, I think we talked about this. Foods. Like, I think you and Derek should do like a smackdown, you know, Sherry versus Marsala.
I would love to talk
to Derek
Brown about doing a Marsala smackdown.
Okay, great. All right. Tell everybody where they can find you. I'm kicking you off the air.
Iron Gate and soon to be open Red Apron in Chinatown.
All right. When is that opening? Ish.
Not sure. Maybe
January-ish? January-ish. Okay. We love that. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Soon the entire world will be neighborhood restaurant.
They're taking over the world.
All right, Eric, let's come back to you real quick.
What are you pouring next?
So going back to our previous conversation, we're going to start with the cava here. This is actually a pretty unique cava. It's a vintage cava, which you don't find too many of. And this is really... Small production. Really, cava is, it's run by two big empires, and it's really hard to find the small growers of the world who pick the grapes, you know, make the cava themselves, vinify it, and bottle it themselves too. So,
and why is that?
Whoops. Sorry.
It's all right.
Got a little fart going on.
It's not a party until somebody spills.
We'll be down licking the floor
or breaks a glass. One or the other. All right. Well, while you're pouring that, why don't we get into our next guest?
Alex Levin is a new pastry chef at Osteria Morini.
Osteria Morini.
Down on the waterfront, and got an amazing story. We were talking about it before, and I'll let you tell your own. But he is a guy that did an relatively early in life career shift that has worked out pretty well. So, Alex, hi. Why don't you give us your 411 real quick?
And I think you should pass over that basket of baked goods that have been sitting at the other end of the studio since the beginning of the show.
Let's see how they go with this salmon.
We have in the basket right now some cinnamon raisin Danish, rosemary parmesan scones.
That's what I want.
And some pepper muffins. Everyone, please make sure to grab a couple.
Please pass it around. But you should tell people about that cinnamon roll, because it's not
Wait a minute. You're busting into my question.
I know, but this is important. You're about to eat the cinnamon roll. Explain why it's so different.
It's special because we actually make the croissant dough in-house, and we use that dough to make the cinnamon raisin Danish. So it's really a lot of work and time. Yeah, well, maybe not a cronut, but it's a little bit more rustic in line with what we do at our restaurant.
Okay, cool. All right,
so tell us about you. So you're a pastry chef with an amazing background already in places worked and things done, but you started off in finance.
I started off in finance. I graduated from Yale and very cookie cutter, went into finance right away. Management after that, and at the end of that, I decided, you know what, to hell with all this, and I'm going to go to the Culinary Institute of America and become a pastry chef.
I just took my first bite. Good career move.
Good choice.
Thank you.
And so how'd you wind up in D.C.?
Well, during the summertime, after working at Café Boulud in New York, I met with
You're like a name dropper. Yale, Café Boulud.
As I said to Jean-Georges, I'm going to go to Café Boulud.
I actually worked at Jean-Georges.
That's why I said that, because I read.
I'm just joking.
Go ahead. I met with our executive chef, Matt Adler, and also with my boss, Bob Truitt, and we discussed the restaurant here in the Yards Park in D.C., and I did a tasting for them, and they decided to offer me the position to come and move down here. And I did so October 1st. I became a D.C. resident in Camden, South Capital, in that area.
Right.
And I work in that area, and I love that area. It's fantastic.
Well, it's exploding over there.
It is. I mean, it's something that everyone tells me 10 years ago just didn't even exist. 5 years ago, it was just talked about, and now
5 years ago, it barely existed. I mean,
you know, I think it's going to be the next Georgetown. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. There's no question.
So tell us a little bit about the Osteria. I mean, we've been there. I mean, it's so beautiful. It's right on the water. But tell us a little bit about the look and the feel and how you're making desserts to go with that place. Because it's not the first Osteria. It's
no,
the
it's not. In fact, part of our group, we're part of the Alta Maria group. Mm-hmm. Amas Fakahani and Michael White have this fantastic group. We are the 12th restaurant that opened as part of this group. Mm-hmm. And what's fantastic about having that corporate structure is the support that we get from them, but we also have our own identity in the restaurant. We're a very rustic Italian. We look at a place like Bologna as a place for inspiration in that region of Italy. Mm-hmm. And so the menu itself has pastas, has a lot of things like balsamic, has a lot of grilled items, things that are very delicious, but also for me in pastry, things that have to complement that. So for me as a pastry chef, I don't want to go with anything that's too rich, too heavy. Everything has to be a nice light ending that fits in with the seasonality of the time of year and also with
the Italian resto.
With the Italian concept that we have.
So how do you go about putting that together? I mean, did you scour books? Does Michael White have sort of a list of things that he's looking for on his menus? I mean, he has such a reputation.
He does. And everybody that is involved in this big company and in our restaurant puts input into what we do, whether it's in pastry, whether it's in the pasta that's made in-house, whether it's what we do at the grill station. Everything is done with a lot of group effort. And that way, we basically are able to make what is ultimately delicious. And I think, you know, in line with what people in our neighborhood and what the city are going to want.
Okay, well, let's talk about how you came up with what's on the menu. Now, because given that there is seasonality and your menu does change frequently, what are some of the things that are available on your menu that, you know, you did a lot of research on or you...
Well, what I did first of all is I found out in D.C. that there are not a lot of very extensive pastry menus in D.C. And I came from a world where you walk into a restaurant and boom, you get 8 choices for dessert right away. And those 8 choices are all going to be delicious, artistic, beautiful. They're going to be colorful. And so for me, I wanted to bring that kind of concept to a DC restaurant.
Okay.
I wanted there to be choice for our customers. I wanted people to look at a menu and say, you know what? That dessert is exactly what fits for me right now. Maybe for last night, it could have been the pistachio savarin with fresh citrus and dates.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a molten chocolate cake.
Which I had, right? I had that.
You had that. Yeah, I gave that to you for lunch.
Yeah, it was very good.
You know, it could be something, you know, more elaborate. There could be a mousse that you crave. Maybe a tiramisu, something classic like that.
Mm-hmm.
We also have 10 different gelati and sorbet available all the time. So someone
you're making all those?
Everything is made in-house, every single item. There's nothing that we bring in. Even our pasta is made in-house. So some people ask about the pasta. The pasta makers come in as early as the pastry people do, and they're sitting there rolling out each little piece of pasta coming out of the machines, little pieces that are going into every pasta bag that goes into the hot water for every service.
Okay.
All right. Well, here's a question, because, you know, we go to Italy periodically, and our absolute favorite dolce is a bomboloni.
That's my favorite.
A traditional breakfast, you know, dolce that you get, and you got to get it warm so that it's, you know, all
go to
of
a
that.
Snack bar and
will
get
you
it in
ever
the morning.
Do anything? I mean, what you've described is not really your typical breakfast dolce. It's
no, but he came in with a basket of
no,
breakfast items.
No, I know
items.
That, but I'm saying, will you ever, like, you know, I know you went to Bologna, they have bombolonis in Bologna. Will you ever go that sort of simple and straightforward?
It's something that we do at one of our restaurants in New York, our flagship restaurant, Maria. Other restaurants in our group also have tossed the idea of putting that kind of concept onto a menu. But the idea for us right now is something that we're thinking about in the future. It's not on my immediate list right now, but it's something that we could absolutely do. Because people like you want it, so why not?
I totally do.
Well, since you brought in all these breakfast items, you guys are not open for breakfast, right?
We're not open for breakfast, but we will be opening for brunch in the new year.
Okay.
And so I thought instead of just bringing in things that you've already tasted, that I would bring in some things that are up and coming that we're going to be having on our brunch menu. These are 3 of the items that we will be having on the brunch menu.
And you forgot your apple turnovers.
Oh, there's also apple turnovers as well. That's true. They're in the box.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a lot of stuff everyone can pick out what they want, and Let me know if you like it.
Well, everything so far is delicious. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I know you guys are doing some stuff for Christmas.
We are.
So I would love to talk about that on air.
Fantastic.
All right, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are digging into a basket of pastries. They're delicious. We'll be back in just a sec.
What do you want to be when you're older?
When I'm older, I want to be a singer. That's my goal.
An organizer of like do-gooders.
I want to be a media mogul.
When I'm older, I want to be anything but the one that doesn't fit in, the one that people don't love.
Everyone deserves a dream.
But some of us are depressed.
Anxious.
Angry.
Scared.
Don't feel like ourselves.
If that's you, say something.
Talk to someone. People will listen. Add your voice at OKToTalk.org. OKToTalk.org.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Alex Levin, who is the pastry chef, the relatively new pastry chef, the fresh-faced pastry chef,
yes,
at Osteria Morini down on the waterfront. And, you know, we were talking off-air about, you know, the most traditional Italian sort of baked thing for this time of year, particularly, is the panettone. And I was asking you your opinion on it.
I actually interrupted, and we got a group consensus that said, no, it's not very popular.
No, it is popular.
It's popular in Italy. Everybody, they're everywhere. But
all the Italian markets, but like we went into the Italian market yesterday. There's huge boxes of it.
It's like poinsettias.
But do people actually love them?
I have no idea. To me, it's like giving somebody a cinder block. Enjoy.
All right, so you're not planning on making it.
You're not going to do your version of that.
It's not on my current agenda right now, so don't worry.
Good. Then I'll be in tomorrow.
All right, so when are you guys starting brunch?
So brunch is going to be in the new year.
Okay.
We're still working out the specific date,
mm-hmm.
But it'll be very soon.
Okay.
And we do
Saturday and Sunday, or just Sunday?
It's going to be Saturday and Sunday,
okay.
As well as whenever there's a holiday weekend, we'll also do it on that as well.
Okay. And what about with Christmas and New Year's?
Well, we are having a special Christmas Eve dinner, and mm-hmm. we invite anyone around in the neighborhood as well as D.C., the greater area, to come by. Mm-hmm. New Year's Eve, same deal. And then we have a special brunch service that we're doing during all of New Year's Day. So for our neighbors in the area that don't have anywhere to go, we will be open,
mm-hmm.
and we'd love to invite everybody in the area to come by.
Okay, that sounds terrific.
Let's do the street address and where you are online. So
well, I think instead of the street address, I think you need to explain where it is, because navigation doesn't get you there, right?
Here's the deal. Maps on Google will find you. 301 Water Street Southeast is our physical address.
Mm-hmm.
And don't rely on GPS. It's
right.
Still not in it. But mm-hmm. if you look on your iPhones or any maps program on the computer, you can find it there. It's in the Yards Park right on the waterfront in that beautiful redeveloped area. Right in front of the water. You can't miss it.
Well, if you've made the hike to Blue Jacket, that's a good landmark, too.
Yeah, it's around the corner. But I think for people who haven't been down to that area, like even if you haven't gone to see a game, or even if you have seen a game, like you wouldn't really know what's over there. You just have to walk around because the area is exploding.
You just walk around. We're just two blocks away from the Navy Yard Metro. It's really accessible on the Green Line.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of parking everywhere right now. We have valet service for the weekend. So if you're coming with your car, come by. We will take care of getting you hooked up with parking. We also make sure that everybody has a way to get back. If you're taking a cab, we'll call cars for you to go back home.
Okay.
So it's very accessible.
Great.
Okay, and you're doing lunch and dinner.
We are, and our lunch menu has incredible house-made focaccia rolls that my team makes, and then Chef Matt does these incredible sandwiches. My favorite is the short ribs.
I had
it's delicious.
It's yummy.
And we have...
So it's better than the McRib, you're saying?
You know what? I'll let you decide.
Jerk.
You come in and taste it.
I'm sure. I don't think the McRib is even meat, so it's fine. All right, great. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's get back to Eric. You got a lot... Yeah. Something red over there.
Yeah, we got... So the last sparkler we're going to be pouring is a Rosé of Malbec from a small little family down in Mendoza, Argentina.
Okay.
And basically... Mendoza sits at about 3,200 feet, which people don't really realize.
Mm-hmm.
And that high altitude actually allows for, you know, a lot of grapes to ripen, but also keep a lot of their acidity, which is really what you need for a lot of sparkling wine.
Okay.
And so it was only kind of natural for them to go into the sparkling.
So would that be considered a sparkling red or a sparkling rosé?
Sparkling rosé.
Okay, because it looks like rosé. But I see more sparkling reds on the market. What are they and why are they?
You know, they've been around. I mean, they've been around since people were able to bottle them. But more or less, you really start to find, you know, the sparkling Shirazes of the world coming out.
Okay.
They definitely have a very cult following. You know, I don't knock any particular brand or style, and people's tastes are what they are. I'm not, you know. It might be the Panettone of the wine world, but like people love them or they
happy
hate them.
Happy to help.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, they're very hard to work with. You either have a cult following who really, really want them.
What do you mean they're hard to work with?
They're hard to work with because you bring them in, and unless you have a cult following and regular customers who can really... demand them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's kind
of like cooler.
It's more like the Marsala because
it's a Marsala.
People have to become acclimated and educated.
Yeah, but Marsala is delicious. I mean, we just had two. I find that sparkling Shiraz like it turns my teeth red. Like that's
there are
how
some
I feel
cloying
like
examples of it. There are some nice dry styles of it.
Okay,
I haven't had any. So
okay.
If you find any, so let me know.
You mean theoretically there are.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what you just poured.
So yeah, the Reginato is 100% Malbec from Mendoza, Argentina. Like I said, it's made by a fella named Pepe, Pepe Reginato. His father had been growing grapes in the area for about 50 years. And like I said, grown at about 3,200 feet.
Okay.
So it keeps a nice little balance with acidity and fruit. What's nice about the Malbec rosés is that they have a little fuller body and, you know, they're a little bit more festive, a little warmer, a little go amazing with food, you know, all across the board, you know. And we were just speaking about Marsala too, and you compare it probably from aperitif to digestif, you know, and they're just a really, really fun way to celebrate. And
well, I think that when people think of rosé,
they think sweet.
They think, well, A, they think sweet, but they also think summer. They don't think of it as a winter time wine.
That's a good point, actually.
I have lots of
them. Finally.
You know, for a lot of people, what we try to translate is that rosés are really for all seasons, especially sort of the lusher styles like this right here. You know, it's a little fuller bodied and, you know, it can be a little bit, you know, a little bit more cheerier and warmer, you know, rather than, you know, some of the Provençal rosés, the lighter styles and everything.
Okay.
Like that.
Well, let me jump in with a sort of a mercantile vein
Please
of
do.
Conversation. It's almost Christmas.
Yes.
A lot of people are still going, what do we get for Aunt Nellie? What do we get for Fred? All that.
I don't have an Aunt Nellie or a Fred.
I've got another family.
Okay,
no,
good.
But I mean, how do they, you know, it's a last minute thing. Can they get in touch with you and say, oh my God, can you put it together? Can you ship it?
I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, what. And sort of a micro level, and to be selfish, cordial, we love to do that sort of thing, help people out of the last minute. We have holiday samplers. We do 3-bottle samplers for red wines, white wines, beer samplers. You got a beer fan, whiskey samplers. You know, you got a whiskey.
Well, I can just speak from personal experience. Yeah. I mean, I came in a couple of weeks ago.